Hi, my name is Amanda Hale. This is my first podcast, and it's about the making of an audiobook. In September 2019, I published my fourth novel, Mad Hatter, with Guernica Editions in Toronto. After the launch began an extensive promotional program. It's a full-time job, getting the bookings, showing up for them, soliciting reviews and interviews, posting on social media every day. A book can take years to research and write, but it does come to an end, whereas promoting that book is an infinite task. I was in full swing with promotion of Mad Hatter when I was stopped in my tracks by the COVID-19 lockdown. I had 17 planned events cancelled in Vancouver, Victoria, and Toronto, along with plans for UK promotion in the fall of 2020. But on the positive side, with this situation, an opportunity dropped into my lap to record an audiobook version of Mad Hatter. It's a long novel, 444 pages in three parts, an intense story set in World War II England, with many regional accents, an Irish narrator, and the occasional European accent. It's a fictionalized account of my own family's wartime experience as a result of my father's three-year internment. He was a member of the British Union of Fascists and a follower of Oswald Mosley, and as such was considered a risk to national security during wartime. My audiobook runs only 14 and a half hours, but the recording and editing of Mad Hatter involved more than 2 months of intense work at Mark Atkinson's barn studio here on Hornby Island. As the reader, I had a buffered corner with chair, table, microphone, and bookstand. Mark was stationed on the other side of the studio, in front of a large screen for his recording and editing work. An essential part of making an audiobook is for the reader to prepare the pages for each session, 20 to 30 pages in my case, reading to myself, perfecting the accents, marking up the pages with the different voices and emphases. A typical day, 10 a.m. at the studio, 3 hours of recording, chapter by chapter, followed by editing of the obvious errors such as explosive consonants, lip smacks, rustling pages, swallows and hesitations. Then I would go home and download the files Mark had sent and listen closely to the day's recordings, marking down the more subtle errors to be corrected the next day before recording the following chapters. As you may have gathered, this is a meticulous and extremely detailed process, especially for the reader. When you encounter perfection in the arts, it gives the impression of ease. That is an illusion. Generally, I would be working a full day with a break for dinner, then back to the book to prepare the next day's pages. Each morning, we'd begin with all the edits we had missed from the previous day, before starting on our next batch of recordings. I must say it was a pleasure to work with Mark Atkinson. He's an excellent musician and highly skilled in all aspects of recording and editing audio files. His sense of humor kept my spirits up during the long process of recording Mad Hatter. When we were done, almost, Mark and I did a distanced high five. Then I listened to the entire 14 and a half hours to catch any last-minute edits, of which there were many. Next began a four-day process of registering with Audible.com, posting promotional text and book cover image, filling out forms and so on, before beginning the actual uploading of 98 MP3 files, dealing with a few inevitable glitches along the way. I resorted to knitting kitchen dishcloths while uploading the files to satisfy my workaholic need for multitasking. And I had plenty of time to think and plan during this process, which has led me to the idea of making podcasts with my own recording equipment and a relatively simple editing program called Audacity. This COVID time has seemed to me the era of the voice. With a growing popularity of audiobooks and people isolated in their homes, talking on their phones with family and friends or through a screen with Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, the voice has become more important than ever in keeping us connected. In my youth, I attended drama school in England and worked in theatre for some years. Experience I have drawn on to dramatise my writing in audiobook form. The next one to be uploaded is my 2007 novel, The Reddening Path, set in Guatemala, where a Canadian adoptee returns in search of her birth mother. I recorded The Reddening Path some years ago as a 7-CD audiobook, but since CDs are now old technology, the recording will be digitalized and uploaded to audible.com for sale in my account alongside Mad Hatter. Ironically, some of the Mad Hatter promotional events that were postponed due to the coronavirus were senior homes bookings in Victoria and in other locations up and down Vancouver Island. BC retirement homes are populated by people who remember the war, especially World War II Britain. I am familiar with senior homes. My mother died in one in the UK. Many of my friends' parents live in these facilities, and I have visited these dear elders in the US, in Canada, and in the UK. Typically, these homes, especially the for-profit ones, are lavishly decorated like big hotels or cruise ships, with luxurious lounges, elegant dining rooms, and friendly staff. Coffee, tea, and snacks are always available in spacious areas set up with couches, mammoth TV screens, and card tables for bridge, crib, chess, and dominoes. But what hits me as I enter these spaces is the dead energy. There is a general feeling of diffusion, lack of focus, like those movies seen through a soft haze, a Fellini parade on the horizon, hunched figures moving slowly, bent over their walkers. My childhood was punctuated by weekly visits to great-great-auntie Maud, who lived to be almost 100. She had been stone deaf, as we were told, since age 15, and lived a spinster life within the family, looking after two generations of children. Everyone had stories about Auntie Maud, many of them humorous, told at her expense as a deaf person. Tricks played on her, my uncles getting away with mischief and teasing behind her back. I don't know when she and her sister Ellen, my great-granny, left the family, probably when Ellen's husband died. I have a vivid memory of an old people's home in Yorkshire, where they sat, one on either side of a fireplace, great-granny plucking at her blanket, Auntie Maud smiling and squirming, making the little noises that only we could hear. Noises of joy at our presence as we mouthed exaggerated words at them both, because Granny too was deaf by then. Auntie Maud was an excellent lip-reader. There they were, like guardians at the fireside in their double room, until one night Granny fell out of bed and was found dead on the floor next morning. Auntie Maud was moved to another care home in Heaton Moor, which was closer to our home, more convenient for visits. I find myself thinking of Auntie Maud a lot these days, remembering in particular those later visits when she was alone in her silent world and always so delighted to see us. She had a front room upstairs at the new place, where she sat in a bay window watching for us, looking onto the garden, which had an oval of grass with a sundial in the centre and sandy gravel pathways winding here and there. I remember the crunch of that gravel under my sandaled feet, the warmth of the stone sundial as I reached up to lean my chin on it. When we entered the room, my mother would touch Auntie Maud gently on the shoulder, and she would look up from the newspaper, the wrinkles in her brow smoothing with delight. I remember the sound of the pages rustling on her lap, and embarrassing little sounds gurgling up from her throat, strangled, breathy sounds of pleasure, like a baby or a puppy squeaking. Auntie Maud couldn't hear the sounds she was making. We had to protect her from that knowledge. She was bottled up, shining all her joy on us, and we didn't know what to do with it. When I leaned across to kiss her, as my mother told me to, Auntie Maud smelled sweet and powdery, as though she might disintegrate if I was not careful, her skin so thin and papery. There had been a brief period when both Maud and Ellen had stayed at our house, perhaps before the Yorkshire home had been found. I never questioned why they were living outside the family. When you're a child, you accept everything as normal. You do not question, especially not in 1950s England, where children were to be seen and not heard. Auntie Maud could not hear me at all, but she feasted her eyes on me and Mum. Most people today are unable to look after an aged parent single-handed, either because they are aging themselves or because they have children who need to be driven here and there, or high-powered executive jobs to hold down, flights to take, full calendars overloaded with responsibility and commitment. In short, no time to accommodate an elder in the house unless they are able enough for babysitting. This COVID time shines a glaring light on the separation of our seniors from their families. How ironic and significant that this virus strikes at our elders, highlighting for us what we collectively have become, a society that places its elders in homes where they have now become the most vulnerable to this virus through age and through clustering. 82% of Canada's COVID deaths so far have been people housed in care homes, staffed largely by immigrants who also look after our terminally ill. These workers, often Filipinos, are immigrants separated from their own families. This parallels the situation of so-called privileged children entrusted to strangers, servants, nannies, boarding school staff. Situations where children learn to bond with fleeting strangers. It is part of colonialist culture and an original precursor to the outsourcing of certain tasks, either domestic or political. It is a systemic societal issue and a long-standing one that already existed during the life of Maud Middlewood during my 1950s childhood and has been steadily growing until today. Clustering aged people together is part of a larger societal pattern characterized by an all-your-eggs-in-one-basket policy. We are out on a limb, and for many of our elders, their branch has fallen. It's a crime to let someone die alone. Death and birth are the mysteries of this world. It is as much a privilege to witness death as it is to be present at a birth. We can see now that the harms of isolation outweigh the dangers of COVID, the many harms to psychological health, to the economy in the form of economic ruin for many, and to the simple act of allowing a family member into a hospital or care home to hold the hand of their loved one as they pass from this world. Senior home deaths are countering the false extension of life at any cost. Medical and pharmaceutical expertise have enabled lives to be extended beyond their natural expectation. But what of quality? There are many who on their third or fourth cancer refuse chemotherapy, preferring to accept the inevitable rather than submit to further toxic treatment. The older I get, the more I think about great-great-auntie Maud and how our family failed to reward her for all her years of service in childcare. She cared for my grandmother and her siblings. She cared for my mother and her four siblings. She is in the ranks of those women to whom I dedicate Mad Hatter. Women who cooked and cleaned for our families, who taught us to read, who listened and cared and showed us kindness. Like Nicole the Hedgehog from France, so named for her prickly hair. She was a fine seamstress and made tiny clothes for my teddy bear. Auntie Maud did not exactly belong with those women because she was our kin. But being a spinster, being deaf, being cast early in her life in the role of servant, that is where she stands in my heart. Thank you for listening to this introductory podcast. It will be followed by an ongoing series focusing first on the background research and themes of Mad Hatter and secondly of The Reddening Path. Mad Hatter is available in paperback and as an e-book from Guernica Editions. The audiobook is at audible.com, where you can hear a 5-minute sample reading. The Reddening Path is available in paperback and as an e-book from Thistledown Press. For information on all my books, see my website, amandahale.com. My work is also available through Canadian libraries and at the unavoidable Amazon.